Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the spirit of reconciliation, the Swapcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have...
Brendan Levi, because I'm second.
And returning to the podcast, the lovely...
Hannah Dallas.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 1936 British sci-fi horror, The Man Who Changed His Mind, starring Boris Karloff, where a mad scientist creates a machine that allows him to swap the minds of others, but this absolute power soon gets out of control. But before we get into that, just a reminder, we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Face Off. So we did get actually a few lovely messages during our little break. So I'll read a few of them out. First, we've got one from James who sent it on Instagram. And he said, just listen to the latest episode and it's another good one. I heard your upcoming show with a movie from 1936 and I wondered if you could, if you had considered the 1940 movie Turnabout, directed by Hal Roach. It may be the first swap of a married couple, and if I recall, the joke is that their voices don't switch. So thanks for the recommendation, James. That was definitely already on my list, but I will definitely pump it up the list. We might do that a bit sooner than I thought. And I don't know, after this movie,
we might want something a little more recent, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like 1940s.
I was going to say, like, I'm happy to explore this era of film. It was fun. It was fun doing something a bit older for once. So.
Yes, it was wonderful.
I loved it. It was a great change of pace.
We got another one from Jess. She said, my name is Jess. I've been listening to your podcast since 2019 and I thought it was finally time to email you guys. Recently, I finished my undergraduate degree in English literature and actually wrote my final essay on the body swap trope. Ooh. And how it's presented in media.
Needless I love that educated people listen to us.
Well, get this. Needless to say, I counted listening to the podcast as research. We actually are research on an actual paper.
Please don't say you cited us in your...
Whenever I need something to listen to when I'm traveling or working out, I always gravitate back towards the Swapcast as the chemistry between you guys is undeniable.
I know. It's,
yeah, especially between so Brendan hot, and I.
Right? You should see this on video chat. It's palpable.
It's the only podcast I'll happily replay episodes of. Though I've watched most of the movies you reviewed and a lot of them are not great. Here's hoping a good swap film gets released soon. I don't know if you're aware of this movie, but there's an apocalypse swap movie, fittingly called Apocalypse CA, that came out in 2011. Frankly, it's awful, but I think you guys would get a kick out of it. I wish it had been handled better because the idea of a swap movie set during the apocalypse sounds fun.
I still want to watch it.
Swap yeah. Apocalypse.
Yeah. Oh, and she also says, P.S., the exchange episode is my favorite. So, you know, I totally understand why that movie is epic. So
I think the biggest compliment there is that you would listen to us, like, again.
Yeah.
I don't even do that. I've done that. Yeah. The only podcast I've done that to was Justin Roiland's, and now I don't anymore.
Yes. Hopefully we don't get cancelled as swiftly as he did. And finally, we have one from Guy, and he says, "Hey, first, I'm not a piece of shit. I reviewed you all on iTunes a long time ago, but I'm
that's
writing."
Accurate, then.
Yes, exactly. That's, as we all know, that's how you are not a piece of shit, reviewing us on iTunes. But I am writing to suggest the 1987 film Hunk as a movie to review. I can say that everyone will enjoy it. Sorry, I can't say that everyone will enjoy it, but I definitely can say Paul will. Thanks for such a great podcast. And I watched the trailer for this, and I could definitely say he knows me. Guy knows me. So we might be hearing a bit more about that film at the end of the episode, I might say.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. So yeah, again, we love hearing from our listeners, and thank you so much for the suggestions. Keep them coming. Keep the accolades coming. We love to know that people are actually listening. So
That's really cool to hear from someone who's writing their thesis in this area. Like, I feel like you need to get them on and like interview them about their expertise.
Yeah, I would love to know what they, you know, what came out of this thesis, what they discovered about the genre. So yeah, good idea. All right, so on to The Man Who Changed His Mind. This film was released in 1936 and is the oldest film we have covered on the show so far. It isn't the very first body swap film, but it's a very early incarnation of one. So my question is, can we see the seeds being planted for the formula we have seen in so many of these films? And is there anything that this film does that has been jettisoned by the swap films that followed?
That's a great prompt, Paul. I feel like you guys have watched a lot more body swap films than I have, though, so...
Yes.
That means I have to answer. I feel like there was those bits and pieces that felt very reminiscent of what we still see today. Like the fact that people are just so unaware that they're in someone else's body and they're acting completely different. You know what I mean? Like they don't seem to be like, oh yeah, no, I'm not me. I need to, you know.
Yeah, they don't put the effort in to try to act like the person.
Any different, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this person's my son. I should be very careful not to seem strange around them. But no, they'll just be like, hey, let's have a cigar, young man. Like, yeah.
I thought that the transformation scenes, like, definitely laid the groundwork for later films, the way that they made a real big deal of... the body swap moment, what do you call it? The transformation? What do you generally refer to that?
The prestige.
Yeah.
But yeah, like plenty of orchestra and like the lights, and even with the limited filmmaking techniques of that era, I thought,
For sure. I love like old science fiction, like so much more fun than like what we have reality.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Probably the movie that came to mind in terms of the swap mechanics of like the machine that's swapping them was the film we reviewed last, which was a 2017 film, Wife and Husband, which was another one where it's kind of like electrodes, you know, stuck to their heads, and they had lots of dials and electrodes and all that kind of stuff. Like, so it's funny, you know, films that are still being made now are using quite similar mechanics than this did. I have to say, like, it did feel very reminiscent of movies that we're still reviewing now and watching now. It's funny how much of that DNA was already present here. We get a lot of the classic moments of, you know, someone being swapped into their body and then looking at their hands and then getting used to their new body in that way. And
well, especially because the guy had no legs before.
Yes.
Well, yeah, no legs that worked anyway.
Yeah. You know, it kind of used that this concept in some really creative ways straight off the bat. Like, yeah, I felt this film totally holds up. I was entertained throughout, and I think it does a lot of the same things that body swap films do now, but it did it like an hour shorter than what a movie would nowadays.
It was certainly concise, wasn't it?
Yeah, punchy even, hey. Mm.
Yeah, there's no fat on these bones. It was just like, let's get to each sequence, or, you know, one after the other. And I really appreciated that.
It's like, look, I'm a man and I'm here to protect you. I know, yeah. I'm a self-made woman and I'm going to be all by myself. It's, yeah.
But I mean, that's another element that I thought was pretty progressive. Like,
yeah,
the female lead was
very independent, very self-minded. Yeah.
She's a doctor. And I thought that was awesome. Like, we kind of follow her from the beginning, and it's her journey to meet this mad scientist. And yeah, there are a few comments about, oh God, what does he say? Like, women that can't keep secrets and they're crying all the time, or why would you employ?
How I hate strong-minded women.
Oh, yes. How I hate strong-minded women. But she was great. Yeah,
it was. Yeah, and it's not like it ended with, like, a cautionary tale of this woman being independent. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She ended up saving everyone pretty much in the end. So,
whereas I would have expected it to be like, see, that's why we don't give you jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like, she seduced the scientist and he like succumbed to her wiles and it, brought upon the downfall of everybody. Like, it was definitely a failing of his ego and I guess like that descent into madness as well, really.
Yeah. And I did like, you know, I feel like a lot of the characters here had a lot more depth than what you'd expect in this kind of film. Like, even the, you know, the quote unquote villain, the mad scientist, Dr. Lorient, like he had a legitimate motivation for turning the way he did. You know, the whole scientific community pretty much turned their back on him and didn't believe him. And you could see why he became what he became. Yeah. And then obviously his like scientist assistant was disabled. And then all of a sudden he had this opportunity to enter like an able-bodied, you know, body, and like there was depth and there was reasons for everyone doing what they were doing. Like,
I wasn't confused why someone like 360'd and all of a sudden was betraying someone
He
was isolated, and the progression or like disintegration of him was plausible. It's that thing, isn't it, of like absolute power corrupts absolutely, and he just couldn't handle it.
So I guess we should do a 30-second plot summary. It has been over a week since I've watched this film. Like, so a bit of a backstory. Well, I watched this film when we were supposed to record it, like an hour before we were supposed to record it. And then there was technical difficulties and we've had to wait a week to record it again. And I very specifically watched it just before we recorded so that I would remember
it.
And now it's been a week and it's going to be a struggle.
Well, I think that's fair, because I feel like it would have been too easy if you'd just watched it.
You want to count me down?
All right. Are you ready?
No, but let's do it anyway.
Well, the clock's already going. Go.
So there's a mad scientist and he's worked out how to swap bodies, and then this woman goes to work for him, and then she gets her boyfriend's dad, who's like a newspaper guy, to fund the research. So then he does, but then when he unveils the research, everyone thinks he's an idiot. So then he goes rogue and then decides to swap his assistant's body with the newspaper guy, and then they decide
You're doing really well.
Yeah. You went with the plot. You're doing literally the entire film.
Oh no.
Got fair way through. Like,
yeah. Fair way through, yeah. And then they decide to, well, they kill the newspaper guy when they swap, because when he goes into the assistant's body, he like dies instantly because the assistant's body is so like frail.
Frail, yeah.
And then the mad scientist decides then he's going to swap into the son, like the girl's boyfriend's body.
That's right, yeah.
And then kill his own body which
the other person for murder, right?
Frame the other person for murder. And then it all goes awry and
because Dr. Claire sees mm-hmm. through because he won't stop smoking, which is a dead giveaway because yes. her boyfriend would never smoke.
What did we think of the boyfriend? So he basically refuses to let her be an independent woman, literally follows her across the country in secret to make sure of her not being independent, actually writes a newspaper article defaming her boss so that she would get fired. did we stand them as a couple?
I didn't. At best, a clinger. At worst, yeah. a controlling, toxic dude.
I just thought it was persistent, you know?
Persistent,
yeah.
sure.
It was romantic. It's a positive. Yeah.
Like, yeah, any other musical score would suit entirely different storyline, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like, marry me. Like, and she's like, no. And you have tailed me into another state or country or whatever it was. And then I'm going to, like, literally, like have to lose you in a chase and jump in a car to get away from you kind of thing. And then, but because she's like smiling and laughing the entire time, it's just like, oh, this is fun being yeah. chased by a stalker.
But, you know, say what you will, he got what he wanted in the end. So
yeah, lads out there, it worked.
Yep.
So
nice guys don't always finish last.
One thing that did break my heart in this film, though, was the treatment of the monkeys.
Yeah, that was a real hard watch, wasn't it?
Yeah. So all the experimentation to see if this body swapping machine would work was all done on monkeys. And obviously, because it was in 1936, they used real monkeys. So who knows the treatment of those monkeys? They were very cute, though, and they were great actors. Like, you had to see the difference in the personalities of the two monkeys in order for that scene to work, and they managed to do it.
Yeah, I assume they, riled one up, and then the other one was just like, you know, hey, come in. Like, yeah. I'm sure it was the same monkey. Or they went through, 14 monkeys, one on each take.
Yeah, I would love to know the backstory of the treatment of those monkeys.
I can't imagine it would be a good one.
No.
I'm always really interested in horror films because it says so much about, whatever people are anxious or afraid of at the time. And mm-hmm. I think my mind immediately kind of went to psychiatry and psychology as a real evolving field in the 1930s and mm-hmm. emerging field, I guess. And this is right. 1936 is kind of, I think, around the time that lobotomies were becoming more common practice. And then by the early 1940s, moving to the late 1940s, they had the results of them had become more clear. Mm-hmm. And I think in general, there were mixed feelings about psychology and psychiatry and what it meant to be working with the brain and what was and wasn't acceptable to be doing. And it felt like this film engaged with that in some ways, the limits mm-hmm. of the brain and the self and how much we should be meddling and this kind of mad scientist character doing horrific things. And I think it's interesting to think about it through the social lens sometimes because horror is always telling us something, and it seems like looking back on it that people were kind of right to be skeptical or cautious of how much we should be opening up people's brains and poking and prodding things around.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I think at this time, the mad scientist became a trope. It was a very present thing in movies at the time. It became its own genre almost.
It was, and almost all of the 1930s sci-fi horror films are to do with zombies or mad scientists. I think there's Frankenstein, Maniac. Yeah, Yeah.
And obviously, like, Boris Karloff, who mm-hmm. played the main character in this, he was Frankenstein. Like,
oh,
he
really?
Was, yeah, he was Frankenstein in Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. So it was very much in his wheelhouse, this film. Though I guess he was on the other side. Like, he was Frankenstein's monster, sorry. He wasn't Dr. Frankenstein.
Mm.
So I guess this is his chance to be on the other side of the operating table.
So to speak.
Yeah. But, yeah, this film actually, you know, has – I'm surprised it's not talked about more because it does have a pretty good pedigree. So, you know, obviously Boris Karloff is an icon in horror from being Frankenstein's monster. And I kind of alluded to Hannah before we started recording that – the director of this film went on to direct Mary Poppins.
Like, that is wild to me. Yeah, I was so intrigued.
Yeah, he actually had a really fruitful career with Disney. So he did the sequel to Flubber, That Darn Cat, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, all the Love Bug Herbie movies. And he also directed a film that we did on the show previously, the sequel to The Shaggy Dog, The Shaggy DA, where the dog stands up and punches someone in the face. which is,
a classic, iconic scene
of cinema. But yeah. And, you know, I have to say, I can see that DNA watching this film. Like, he has a visual style that's really interesting. And, like, I think that kind of obsession with the mechanics of the swap and all that kind of stuff then shows itself again in films like The Absent-Minded Professor and Flubber and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, did you guys kind of feel that when you were watching it?
Like, watching it, I always find myself very curious about just old cinematography techniques and stuff, like, and just always sort of looking at it and sort of, you know, asking myself, oh, what are they doing here to, like, you know, to build that show or whatever. Because I'm often on that other side of it. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I genuinely was not, like, I guess with a lot of stuff we watch, I'm often like, oh, like, you know, don't do that. Do it this way or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely can see that he knew what he was doing. Like, there was all these shots. I was like, nice. Good job.
It was really well crafted, wasn't it? You could feel the skill and it just made me, it's been a long time since I've watched something this old.
Yeah.
And there is something so beautiful about black and white filmmaking and the ability to storytell in that medium, I think. It's just, yeah, I can see why he ended up going on to do those films, especially like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Mary Poppins. Like, could you do, he obviously is like a very genre literate director. Like, he's kind of helped craft the horror genre in a way, but yeah, what an awesome guy.
Like, yeah, Mary Poppins is like technical.
I'd say it's like a masterpiece, but
yeah.
Well, I was just thinking of, like,
I would agree,
how it was just such, like, beyond its time technically. Like, there's a lot of stuff that they were doing in that had never been done before. Especially with, like, the painting,
the blend,
like,
of the animation.
Blended animation and stuff. They, like, came up with new ways to, because it's not even green screen. It's this whole, anyway.
Yeah.
It's definitely someone who knows what they're doing. I thought there was, like, an element of, and I guess this would be the same for all sort of monster movies if you would put this in that sort of category, but, and links in with that fear, like, that fear of, like, of, you know, lobotomy and science and, you know, going where you shouldn't, but, like, a tone of like a religious aspect, like the idea of the soul and being everyone being, they were more afraid of him doing it because they didn't know what it meant to be human anymore, because, you know, when he did it with animals, the next step was, like, trying it with humans, and that seemed to be what really gave fervor, the idea of, like, switching bodies and soul. And I think that was really interesting aspect of how you look at that era and science and the fear of what it could mean. And yeah, I know, I found that interesting.
And the fact that he referred to it as thought content, I felt like a very modern way to describe the mind. Content. Yeah,
oh, I didn't pick up on that. That's such a good point. Yeah. But I know what you're saying, Brendan. It feels like there's this push-pull or curiosity and fear around the boundaries of the soul and self, and that being a really scary thing in the film. Like, if we're going to be swapping people in and out, like, is there something that remains that makes them, like, it's their-ness, unique, like, their soul? And does that exist? Can that be quantified? Should we be
transferred?
I think people are still really engaged by those kinds of questions, and that's probably why, like, the body swap genre, like, endures, because we're still really not sure where someone's, like, I don't want to get, like, too epistemological about it, but yeah, there's still that the unanswered questions about what makes where a person exists, for want of a better word.
And it's funny that, like, we watch so many of these films and they're all trying to grapple with that, and, like, maybe 1% of them actually have anything interesting or profound to say about it. Yeah. So many of them, you know, reach for this and just, like, fail miserably. And this film so early on in this genre, I think, does a better job than so many of the other ones.
And in a short amount of time too. It's only an hour. Yeah. So well worth watching, by the way. Everyone can just jump on YouTube.
Yeah, FYI, it's free to watch on YouTube. So I would highly recommend it.
What's that for?
I'm coming with you.
You're doing nothing of the sort.
But you need someone to look after you.
Sorry, Dick, but I specialise in looking after myself.
Then I pack my bag for nothing.
I'm afraid so.
How I hate strong-minded women.
You heard what we thought of the movie, but how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, Brendan.
Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not, please.
Dang.
Everyone is beautiful in their own way.
Ugh. All right, so Boris Karloff as Dr. Lawrence, mad scientist, hot or not?
Can't even have an attractive name, jeez.
Yeah. You don't like the name Boris?
Boris Karloff, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, nah. Sorry, mate.
I was looking at him during the film because obviously knowing that I'm going to be on a podcast where I have to say if this person's hot or not. And I was like, is there an attractiveness there? And I was like, well, maybe I'll Google him when he was more like in my age range and he still looked like 60 years old. So like he's just got one of those faces.
He's like prematurely elderly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think he is fantastic, but sexy, not getting there. I'm sorry. Hannah?
Smash or pass? Pass.
And, this movie did him no favors. He had, those, super dark
bags under his eyes.
Yeah. Like, stage makeup sort of really accentuated, dark rings and stuff like that. So,
Probably my favorite shot in this whole film was kind of when he was going insane, and it was kind of like him superimposed over spinning footage, and he's it's underlit and he's kind of looking crazy and screaming. I was like, that is a cool shot.
Yeah, very cool shot. Did that get you going though, Paul?
No, I wasn't.
So
horny.
There you go. Yeah.
So John Loder as Dick Hasselwood, her love interest.
Good old Dickie.
Yeah, I have to say, if you take away his personality and how toxic he was, he was a handsome guy in the film. And then I look at his IMDb picture, I'm like, was I seeing him right? Because he doesn't look good there.
Oh, maybe I should look him up. What's his name again?
John Loder. He's got one of those faces. At certain angles, he's super handsome, and then at others, you're like,
I think in profile, he looks great and with a certain expression, but hot he is not to me.
Yeah.
Like everyone was just smoking so much that they just all look like weathered sort of leathery people.
I don't know. I'm looking at it. He's got the face of a weenie. Like he's a weenie.
He's a weenie.
So rest in peace, John Loder, mate. You know. Anna Lee as Dr. Claire. I thought she was a smoke show. I loved her. And like some of her outfits, I'm like, wow, like were they wearing that then? Like they actually look like modern outfits. And she pulled them off really well. So I thought she was stunning.
Yeah, me too. Classic Hollywood, like of the era, like the pencil eyebrow, the finger waves. I was there for all of it. It was beautiful.
One thing I forgot to mention about her, her journey in this film is this mad scientist hires her. She goes across the country to help him out in his laboratory. And, you know, she's there because she's a respected doctor and he liked what she did previously. And the first thing she does when she gets there is does the dishes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, unfortunate.
if they kind of acknowledge it, though, don't they, from memory?
Yeah.
She's cleaning up after these slobs who are kind of absent-minded and lost in their work. And
yeah.
Yeah. But it's not the best look, is it?
In the 2023 remake, they're not making her do the dishes as the first thing when she gets there. Frank Sellier as Lord Hasselwood, the newspaper magnate.
No, he had a jovial quality, but not a sexy dude.
I mean, I'm not going to yuck someone else's yum, but that's not for me.
Who's yum? Who's yummy you're yucking? No one was after this guy. Well, I guess someone would have had to sleep with him at some point for him to have a son, but who knows what he used to look like.
Well, the secretary, right?
Oh, yeah, he was fucking the secretary. I forgot about that.
I just assumed that would be quite scandalous to put into a film, Ethan, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because I thought, like, it was sort of like, they sort of hint at it, but then it's like quite clearly, you know, brought up by
and it was quite like it's a comedic beat that I reckon we've seen in like modern shows. Like it felt like a very modern joke where he treats her in a certain way and then she's like, because they're having a sexual relationship, she's like offended by it and then like storms out crying. It felt like something that I've seen very recently.
Is infidelity something that was policed by the Hays Code, or were they not really phased? Just the gays.
I'm sure it would have been.
Mm.
I'm guessing this would have been in that era of the Hays Code.
It was 1934 to 68.
Yeah,
and just for the audience, because obviously I know. Tell her what the Hays Code is.
The Hays Code was a self-imposed set of guidelines for the film industry, and it was it prohibited like swearing, nudity, realistic violence, sexual perversions, and like sexual violence.
Yeah. So, but you watch a lot of films from like the 20s and early 30s before this code came in, and it was pretty fucking risque. Like they got away with a lot, and then this came in.
Code came in, and
it turned, I guess, Hollywood into what it is now, like the prudish establishment it is now. So,
yeah, right.
Though, but I mean, like,
this is a British film, though.
This is a British film, so I don't know if that would have quite been under that banner.
Right. I was going to say, like, didn't that just become, like the code of, you know, MPG?
Yeah, I mean,
or 18?
Yeah, the classification, like, systems in America and in Australia, they're all self-imposed by their industries, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still, the legacy still lives on today.
Hazelwood, I wish you'd treat my body with more consideration. After all, you're only the temporary tenant.
Temporary? Why temporary?
Hazelwood came here to throw me out, to smash all this. But if you remain, Hazelwood...
Why not? I don't grudge Hazelwood my body. He deserves it.
He needn't have it long. I don't have to go on keeping him alive.
No, no, it's murder!
Exactly, my lord. The perfect murder. Death from natural causes.
In the meantime, thanks for the sound body.
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of The Man Who Changed His Mind from across the interwebs.
Where Paul pulls out an old-timey newspaper.
Crossteam on Letterboxd gives it 3 stars, and they say, Boris Karloff is at peak gilf here.
So someone's yuck is yum, right?
Like. Yeah, yeah. So somebody loves the Karloff. Teach his own, I guess. Charisse gives it 3 stars as well, and they say, I love how Claire immediately figures everything out. Your dad was acting differently? They switch brains. You're smoking? You switch brains.
She did literally see 2 monkeys get switched in a laboratory. Like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, she was aware.
I thought it was believable. Benny Oscara gives it 3.5 stars, and they said, Karloff could trade brains with me anytime.
Okay.
There's so much to unpack there. I don't know where to begin, but let's not. Turbo Snore gives it 3.5 stars. Turbo Snore, that's a great name. 3.5 stars, and they say, wow, the download and upload speeds were impressive in the 1930s.
Okay.
Deleting bars of when they're like switching
bodies. Oh, okay.
There's those 2 like tubes and the like colors would change.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how like people back then would have quantified that in their brain. Like, you know, because I feel like if there was a transfer of minds, you would think about it in terms of like data. But if computers don't exist, like what is that sort of to you? I don't know. I guess two floating orbs of energy. But then the loading, yeah. Anyway,
I do love how they visually represented that, because it is quite an abstract concept. And had it been represented before?
I'm sure not. Like, not in this way. I think a lot of the other body swaps that have come before have all been like a supernatural based.
Yeah,
right. From what I understand, like Turnabout, it's a lot of them were about like the afterlife, screwing up, and people being switched accidentally by God or whatever. Like, so this, like, the concept of taking someone's brain out of someone and putting it in another and swapping them, like, it was probably a pretty new kind of thing to grapple with. So, yeah, very impressive. Finally, Spesh to Death gives it 3.5. And they say, listen, I don't want to come across as one of those get off my lawn oldster types who can't handle change, but for the love of all that is Kino, bring back the mad scientist as a horror villain. It's been proven by science, the mad type, that adding a mad scientist to a horror movie plot will increase enjoyability tenfold. You get body swapping, corpse robbing, man-animal hybrids, or manimals for those of us in manimal circles, not to mention Tesla coils and weirdo underlings. So next time you have a Cracker Jack story idea, take a good hard look at it and ask yourself, am I doing a disservice by not adding a mad scientist to this script? The answer will always be yes.
I love that.
Yeah, that's cute. And I can't say I disagree.
Mm. I feel like
I recall the Hotel Transylvania.
Okay, yes, they did not benefit from the mad scientist.
What are you doing? Let me out of this.
Not yet. I need something first. Don't you see? I take your body, your name, and Claire, and you take mine, the body of the man the police were hanged for murder, the body of the man who killed Hazel.
Let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. So, I'll start us off. My connection is black and white British movies. And a film that actually came to mind a bit when I was watching this one. It was made 10 years after this in 1946. And it's a film called A Matter of Life and Death, which was directed by Powell and Pressburger. Have either of you guys seen this one?
No, I haven't, no.
Obviously, Powell and Pressburger, they're like legendary directors. They did films like The Red Shoes and Black Narcissus. And this is a film starring David Niven, who, you know, from Bridge and the River Kwai and a lot of like famous movies from that era. It's a film about a soldier, and he is in the World War II, and he's parachuting out of his plane and he is meant to die, but there's a mix up and he doesn't. And then when the angel comes to let him know, we made a mistake and you're actually supposed to die. He's like, well, in the last 3 days before you found me, I've actually met the love of my life and I want to live with her forever. And I don't think it's fair that because of the mix-up that you've done, that I have to be like taken away from her. So then he has to go to the afterlife and plead his case to like a jury of the afterlife of why he deserves to live. It's a fantastic movie. It's regarded as one of the all-time greats for a reason. Its visual representation of the afterlife is beautifully done. And, it's a visual feast. The performances are fantastic. And I think specifically to us, like Brendan and I specifically, having watched all these movies, and so many of these SWAT movies are very similar in terms of about these like afterlife mix-ups and the bureaucracy of the afterlife. This is the film that shows how it should be done. So
amazing. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I would highly
There's such a it's a thing. It's like a genre in itself. The idea of like the bureaucracy of heaven or the afterlife in general. I just find that interesting.
And I think it's, you know, human
as common as this trope.
Yeah, almost. And I think it is like a human urge to want to,
I guess,
bring some order to something that we have no control over. It's a beautiful film. I would highly recommend it. It's 1946, but it still 100% holds up to today's standards. So, Matter of Life and Death. Hannah, what's yours?
I have two kind of more tenuous recommendations. I hope I can justify both adequately.
Yeah.
But the first one, I was just thinking when you were reading that review before about the lack of the mad scientist in modern filmmaking. And I think that Ex Machina actually has that trope in a revised way, but it also kind of deals with the same sorts of ideas around the mind, but instead of it being a body swap or transference, it's that tricky question of AI and can we replicate human consciousness.
The modern mad scientist is the tech genius.
Yes, modern mad scientist being the tech genius. And I think it's incredibly timely now because everyone is, you know, using ChatGPT and like image generators, and it's a very rapidly changing landscape, and it's and one terrifying.
That everyone is very afraid of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be my first one. And the second one is Ratched Season 1, which is a psychological thriller TV series. It came out in 2020, and that's it's a prequel to the novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest by Ken Kesey. And it explores the backstory of Nurse Mildred Ratched in a mental institution. The reason I've kind of made that connection is more around the lobotomy, psychiatry gone wrong kind of horror reading that I mentioned earlier. And I didn't see season two, but I haven't watched it since 2020. But I thought that Sarah Paulson was amazing. The set and costume design is incredible in that as well, and it has a really I would say complex queer storyline in there without giving too much away. But yes, they are my nice. Two recommendations.
I didn't even realize there was a season two of that.
Is there?
I think it was like a one and done from memory.
Oh, was it?
But I mean, I only watched the first episode, to be fair.
It didn't
grab me, but Ex Machina, I can definitely back up that recommendation.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah. Brendan, what's your recommendation?
So my recommendation is also a British based and also black and white.
Okay.
And mine is called The Elephant Man, directed by David Lynch. This film, it's very much a departure from his, not in a total sense, of his horror, under normal things sort of vibe, but it's more, a sort of a tender story about this man who has a true story, about this guy. What's his name?
Mr. Elephant.
Mr. Elephant. John Merrick? This man who sort of takes him out of a freak show, who suffers from like a disease. I think it's called, isn't it called like elephantitis?
Yeah, I think it is actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way gives him a chance at life. Like, and he's this sweet, articulate person, and he sort of affects all the people who sort of interact with him in for the better. And I think it's definitely well worth the watch. It's also set in like Victorian England, so it very much has like this old school of, like, it was made in the 80s, but it's like definitely sort of looking at those old monster films and sort of borrowing the mise en scène from those. I think it's very much worth the watch. And Anthony Hopkins does a spectacular job as the sort of protagonist who saves this man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well worth the watch.
Yes, for sure.
You dirty swindler! Violence won't help you!
You think you'll beat me? You and your money, well, you haven't, you haven't!
I leave here, I'll take all this with me.
On the contrary, it stays here, and tomorrow I shall have it destroyed.
I designed it, I built it.
With my money, in my institute. You've used my name for the sort of quackery that wouldn't deceive a schoolboy. But now you're finished here, and your apparatus is mine to do exactly what I like with.
You shan't touch it.
All right. So if you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every Body Swap film we've reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we going to put The Man Who Changed His Mind on our lists?
How big is your list, Hannah?
How big is my list? I'll have to compile it for you and send it in, because I'm sure I've seen a lot of Body Swap films, but I've not necessarily like stored them away by genre.
You haven't ranked them in order of your favorites.
No, I haven't.
So the ones you've watched for the podcast, though, you've seen what? Love on a Leash.
Yeah.
Yep. And In Control.
Mm-hmm.
And is this the third? Or
this is the third, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like it would be incredibly insulting if Love on a Leash is first, but I also completely understand.
It's actually really hard, because that was so fun to talk about, and I've spoken about that film to more people than any other film that I've seen recently.
The Man Who Changed His Mind, yeah.
So it really depends on the metric, I think, about enjoyment or quality. This is the highest quality film by a country mile.
Yeah.
But I definitely enjoyed Love on a Leash more for reasons.
I'm going to put it in between 17 Again and Family Swap. So pretty high on the list. Not quite in the top 20 category.
17 Again's good.
Yeah, that's like one of the all-time classics. Yeah. So, I'm pretty comfortable putting it there. I really enjoyed this, and it was such an easy watch. An hour. It's so good.
I'm going to be putting it above Avatar: The Way of the Water, and underneath Love and Unleashed, because Love and Unleashed is higher than Avatar Way of the Water.
That's actually insanity, but... So, next episode, I thought we should take the recommendation of our lovely listener Guy, who really gets me. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to bring in a really good friend of mine, Bill Antonou of the BGM Bad Gay Movies podcast, who's been wanting to come on the show for a while. And I thought, this film sounds gay as fuck. So,
sounds gay. The trailer. What was the film called again?
So this is a 1987 fantasy comedy called Hunk, where a computer nerd makes a deal with the devil and gets a new beefcake buddy.
That is gay as fuck, and I love it.
This film actually looks fucking hilarious, and I'm here for it. So, yes, we'll have to dial in to Canada. I'll see the logistics of making that work with our insane time difference, but I think it'll be worth it. So that'll be the 1987 fantasy comedy Hunk, and you can watch that one also for free on YouTube. So for anyone who wants to play along.
They do know you well.
Yes.
They know you very well.
I'm so glad that, you know, the true me has come across on this podcast.
I feel like you're building a strong personal brand, and yes. Yeah, people are really seeing you.
Thirsty idiot.
I want listeners to tell me which movie I am in swap form. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. Send in your thoughts.
Imagine if it's some really depressing piece of shit and how you feel about yourself. Thanks again, Hannah, for joining us on our insane podcast.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Hope you enjoyed yourself. So until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground, DPW, and review us on iTunes or Spotify. And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Brendan Levi.
And I was Hannah Dallas.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.